When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Chris Evans here. Thank you for downloading this week's podcast of The Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, tough guy Ross Kemp shares stories from his new documentary, The Millennium Dome Heist. Sky Sports pundit and Liverpool legend Jamie Carragher talks the greatest games with his new book, The Greatest Games. Top TV judge Rob Rinder tells us all about his two-part tear-inducing series, My Family, The Holocaust and Me. And two-time heavyweight boxing champion of the world, Tyson Fury, spars with us over his new book, The Furious Method. All of that and loads more still to come. Now, Dapper Dave, tell us, who's the first guest?
If he gets knocked down, he gets back up again. You'll never keep him down, and you can learn just how he does it. His new book, The Furious Method, is knockout now, and here for a gentle verbal sparring session is two-time heavyweight world champion. It's the one, it's the only, it's Tyson Fury!
Good morning, Tyson!
Good morning!
How are you doing?
How are we?
Very well, how are you, pal?
I'm not too bad, thanks very much. Yeah, just after breakfast, about to go training after this interview and just have a nice relaxing day, really.
Well done, great book, by the way, The Furious Method, Tyson Fury, Transform Your Mind, Body and Goals. How long have you been working on this, pal?
I was working on this from the beginning of the lockdown. The first lockdown came to me, I was thinking, right, it's now it's time to write another book. Reason being, lockdown's happening, and I know there'll be a lot of people struggling with mental health and stuff, and just an insight on how I dealt with my problems when I was going through all the hard times and bad times. I thought I'd document it all down, and hopefully it can help other people control or help them with their mental health problems.
Now, King of the Ring, past, present, and hopefully future as well. But also, you are king of, or one of the kings, of how to make a regime work for you. It's all about your regime, isn't it?
For sure. Yeah, a routine regime is how I live these days. For the last 2 years, I've had a maintainable regime that I've stuck to on a daily basis. And it's really, really helped me, especially with someone like me who's always up and down in mindsets and stuff like that. So if I keep my mind focused on targets and goals, I don't have much time to have all that downtime in my mind.
Yeah, and I like regime because, you know, doing the show every day, you know, we have to be up at like 3:30, 4 o'clock and we're in London for 5 and we're on the air at 6:30 and we finish at 10. And it's great because, A, we love our job. We're very lucky, of course. But B, it makes us behave the night before, which is really important. It makes us engage in the world because we have to research certain things because people are coming on the show, like your book, for example. But also, yeah. if you have a regular regime and routine, it takes away, you know, the bother of decision making, and that can be exhausting.
It can be exhausting, you know. There's a lot of decisions out there that you think about. It takes all your energy away. And by the time it comes to making that decision, you're still in the same boat where you don't know what to do anyway. So I think with me, it's like overthinking things all the time.
Yeah.
And I've learned, I've had a guy, one of my friends, Sean, I mentioned him in the book, he always tells me about trying not to worry about things that I can't control. And that's what I've been trying to do for the last couple of years.
And I love the book because, you know, it's not too confrontational because it's broken down into bite-sized pieces. Like this section here, a couple of pages, Think Like Arnie, someone you admire is Arnold Schwarzenegger. What have you learned from him?
You know, he's a very influential person. He's been a very successful person. And, you know, he says it as it is. There's always going to be naysayers out there and people who are hating on others because they're trying to follow their dreams and goals. We just need to ignore these people and crack on with your life and set your targets and set your goals. You know, I was told this saying last year by my nutritionist, George Lockhart, and he said, it comes from a famous book. I can't remember what book it was, so don't try and quote me on it, but it was like, if you don't set a target, you'd be shooting out things and just hitting everything and missing everything. You'd never hit the actual thing you was going for in life. Where in life, if we set a target, no matter how far away this target is or how unreachable it is, at least you've got something to aim for.
Yeah.
And eventually, you are going to hit this target no matter what it is.
Yeah.
As long as you believe and trust in yourself and you keep following your dreams to hit that target, eventually you're going to hit it. It's like if a cruise ship was just travelling around with no destination point, it'd travel around, it would never get anywhere. But 9 times out of 10, it will reach the destination point where it's headed to.
I love that. I love it. It sounds so simple, but it's so true. You shouldn't be hijacked by the goals, you know, or the outcome, but to have a direction, which is the target, is so useful. And if you focus on the... So you pick your target and then you focus on the practice that it might take to get to where you want to go, but then almost forget the target and then just carry on practicing. You find the target sometimes comes to you, and that's the best thing in the world, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's all about working towards what you want, setting your targets, setting your short-term goals, long-term goals, and having a regime and a routine planned.
Yeah.
I think especially with someone who's suffering with mental health problems, the best advice I can give to anybody is to have a structured routine, set your day out in advance and try and follow the script.
Yeah, and you've more than had your troubles, and they're well documented, and you've been very candid about them in last year's book. When you blew into 28 stone, and you're looking at yourself in the mirror, and then you were being hated. So what tips do you have for people to overcome their own low self-esteem, their own sort of take on themselves, and then what others might be saying about them?
You know, that your own self-esteem, like I say, you've got to figure out where you want to be, set your goal, and then try and achieve it. You know, no matter how low you are in life, there's only one way you can go, and that's upwards and get better and better and better.
Yeah.
And as for other people, peer pressure, people are always going to have peer pressure, but it's how we take it on, especially in the world today of like social media and all that sort of stuff. There's a lot of stuff on there, like negative stuff, and if people post stuff and other people comment on it, I mentioned that in the book as well.
Yeah, I know.
It's not to be taken too seriously, because the one thing I've learned in this world is you can't please everybody. No matter what you do, if you're great every day, you're gonna upset somebody.
Yeah.
So you can't make the world happy one individual by saying everything correct every single day.
Yeah.
So I think you just gotta worry about what's important in your life and not worry about what other people are thinking or saying about you too much. I talk about it, blocking out the negativity and the haters and all that sort of stuff.
All right, Tyson Fury, The Furious Method, out now. Transform your mind, body, gut and goals. Thank you very much, Tyson. Happy Christmas to you, and bring on the king.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
The subject of our next guest documentary brings a whole new meaning to the phrase getting De Beers in. The Millennium Dome heist with Ross Kemp is on ITV1 tonight at 9 p.m. And here to tell us more is the most diamond geezer, with a tale of some almost diamond stealers. It is, of course, Ross Kemp.
Thank you very much, Dapper Dave. Dapper Dave introing from home. Can you tell there, Ross? Could you tell the difference in quality there between the two?
No, not really.
Ross, tell us more. The Millennium Dome heist with you. That's you, Ross Kemp, actual Ross Kemp, tonight at 9 p.m. on ITV.
Yep. So, £350 million worth of diamonds, surrounded by £1 million worth in cash, stuck in the Millennium Dome, and funnily enough, some robbers thought it would be a good idea to try and take it, and they attempted to do so. But it's a really long tale, because even though we can make no connection between those guys and two previous robberies, these guys were highly organized. They knew how to cut hydraulics. They rammed the back of vehicles, if they were the same guys, which we're not saying they were. But the one thing that they all had in common was they managed to cut off arterial routes to the crimes that they committed and get away by boat. And that's the same thing that happened on the Millennium Dome heist. However, they didn't get away by boat that time, because they all got arrested.
So bulldozers and speedboats and you. Now, this is a new string to your storytelling bow. I like it, Ross. Are there more to come?
Not at the moment. We've got to wait for some more robberies to happen, I guess. I mean, it's very much a crime of its time. You know, these days it's a lot easier to rob with a laptop.
Right.
But what I really got from it was that it was only 20 years ago, but 20 years is a very long time. And, you know, in those days, it was considered cool, for instance, to drink water from a plastic bottle. People smoked openly. Mm. And a lot of people were paid in cash. So the year before that actual robbery took place, there was something like nearly 300 armed robberies in London. they were commonplace because there was so much cash floating around. And we live in a very different time now. The biggest selling phone that year was a Nokia phone that was analog and didn't have a camera. So, you know, we've actually changed a heck of a lot in those 20 years. And, of course, crime has changed with it.
Now, had they pulled this off, would it have been the biggest ever in the UK?
It would definitely have been the biggest ever in the UK, yeah. I think because, obviously, it's £350 million of diamonds then, it would be a lot more now. And they nearly did. I mean, the fact is, the glass surrounding it, the security glass, was supposed to withstand a battering for over 30 minutes, and it actually collapsed in under 30 seconds.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, they got through to the diamonds. They ramrode the side of the building with a JCB. They threw smoke grenades down, but the police this time were waiting for them.
Now, how do you tell the story? Is it actual CCTV footage? Is it recreation? Are you on the ground there?
Yeah, I actually go back, obviously, to the dome, but a lot of it is just footage from the actual day of the raid. I mean, it was being filmed from the top of Canary Wharf Tower. They had cameras out on the river when they arrested. You should see apparently the face of the guy in the boat. He had no idea, and then this rib turned up with 25 armed policemen in it.
Oh my goodness.
I think his world fell apart at that point.
Not surprised.
But you've got to sort of, like, I've got a grudging respect for them. They were incredibly organized. And to think, you know, that they've managed to smash their way in. They had all the equipment to break the glass, and they really would have got away with it hadn't been for the police lying in wait for them.
So 9 p.m. tonight sounds brilliant. It's after my bedtime, but I'm definitely going to watch it over the weekend with the kids.
Thank you.
No, it really is. Is it an hour or a couple of hours?
It's an hour, mate.
An hour. Okay, all right, good. And what else are you up to, Ross?
I'm making a documentary at the moment for ITV. I can't tell you what it's about.
Oh, come on.
It sort of involves exotic creatures.
Right.
You know, those that slither around and those on four legs. And it's quite interesting just to see the extent of how many people own really quite extraordinary exotic creatures in the UK.
Now, you're on the rain in a bit. I know you've got to go. Is that from home? Are you zooming from home?
I'm zooming from home, mate.
I'm
sat in my little office with the leaks in the ceiling where the kids keep splashing water through when they have a bath.
Have you worked on your backdrop, your TV backdrop, your Zoom TV backdrop?
No, you know what? It's really rubbish. It's absolutely... In fact, it's got my diary up. You made me remind me I've got to move my diary because I'll be being intercepted by the baddies if they
exactly.
see where I'm going next week.
But you've won loads of awards. Get them behind you. Come on, you've got 3 minutes before you're on.
You know
what?
I'm not going to do that.
Come on.
I might get me nuts 09 award out, but I'm not getting the BAFTA, no.
All right.
No, it's a really bad backdrop, funnily enough.
No, yeah. I don't... Well, where'd you keep your BAFTA?
It is actually in the lounge with the other kind of documentary awards and all the... I've got a few soap awards, believe it or not. It sounds like I'm talking about my awards now. And they're up in the office upstairs, hiding around. I think I've got some like ridiculous one, like the TV Quick Best Looking Man of like 1989 or something. Hey, 89.
Beautiful.
What a good year.
Beautiful. Great year, pal. Ross, great to talk to you as always. Thank you so much.
Cheers, my friend.
You're very welcome. Bye. Sounds great, doesn't it? What a lovely show. The Millennium Dome Heist with Ross Kemp tonight. ITV, 9 p.m, full of intrigue. Actual CCTV footage. Can't wait to see that guy's face when he thinks he's going to get away scot-free on his own speedboat and 25 fully armed coppers pitch up on a high-speed rib.
I'm rich! Oh, no, not.
You're not anything anymore, mate.
Yeah.
Your history is what you is.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
A Liverpool legend through and through, he's been involved in some pretty tasty games himself. His new book, The Greatest Games, detailing the battles that helped shape his love of football, is out on Thursday. And here, ready to administer a crunching tackle, is the one and only Jamie Carragher.
Morning, Jay.
Morning, Chris. All okay?
Yeah, very well. How are you? How's your gang?
Yeah, all doing okay at the moment, mate, yeah.
You've had a week of the footy on Sky. If this vaccine news comes true and we can get fans back to football, I mean, come on, how much better will it be?
Oh, it will. I can't wait myself. It'll feel like all your Christmas has come at once, I think, when you hear that roar in the crowd when a goal goes in. We've missed it so much, and at this moment the football's been great in some ways without the crowds, and you just think how much better it'll be with the supporters back, and fingers crossed, the news that we've had in the last day or so proves to be correct and we can get back to a normal life as soon as possible, which means football crowds back.
Yeah, and I was talking to Alan Brazil about this last week. Vass and I and Rachel were talking to Alan Brazil because he's got a new book out as well. And we were saying, what effect do you think it's had on the players? He said, well, you can see from the scorelines, these scores, you don't know for certain. He said, but this kind of scorelines we're seeing would have been very unlikely had the crowds been in there, because especially, defending a lead or defending, a nil-all draw, the pressure's so much more on not to give a goal away when there's a crowd there. That's what was his take on it. What do you think?
I think he's spot on. I think some of the scores that we're seeing are the type of scores we'd see when we play practice matches at training grounds where there's not as much intensity or pressure on that game. And I think a lot of that comes from the crowd. I think players are playing more relaxed now, so maybe that helps the attacking players. They're not as nervous in front of goal maybe because there's no crowd. And maybe the fact that there's no crowd means that some of the defenders are lacking a little bit of intensity and concentration, because they keep you on your toes, as we all know, crowds.
Yeah, they do indeed. And, it's the same with, live performances, in entertainment and other aspects where, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people are invited to get together. Have you seen anything? We talk about all the things we've learned in lockdown and we can take forward with us the silver linings. Have you seen anything on the pitch because of players playing differently that they might be able to use when crowds come back? Or will it be like flipping a coin and it'll be like, back to what football was like 9 months ago?
Yeah, I don't think we'll take too much from it, because I just don't think you can influence on the pitch in terms of if there's no crowd there the way that we've seen now, because the crowd makes a difference to people. Some people actually may play better without a crowd. I think certain players need the crowd. It really stimulates them. I think certain teams rely on the crowd a lot more than others.
Yeah,
I see some teams near the bottom of the league. I look at Sheffield United. I think being no supporters there is a huge miss for them. I think it'll be a huge miss for Liverpool throughout the season. And some people just players feed off that. And I'd like to think, the quality and the goals that we're seeing will still be there. Hopefully, fingers crossed. But whether it is or it's not, I mean, football with the crowd there will be a lot better spectacle than what we have right now.
Yeah, and especially, back at home, as far as you and I as a fan is concerned, back at Anfield, because Liverpool are champions this year, every time they would have gone onto the pitch this year, the atmosphere would have been electric in their favour at home, and they're just missing that advantage.
Yes, that is maybe a slight problem for Liverpool. They've still started the season really well. And I think, them or Man City are still the two top teams, or the teams to beat, if you like. But there's no doubt towards the end of the season, if the title's in, not sure where it's going to go, it's in contention with different teams. The Anfield crowd, you think, could be able to drag Liverpool home. So fingers crossed this vaccine is available, and it means Liverpool can be dragged over the line for the title.
Yeah, please God, fingers crossed there's a lorry load of it going to Merseyside as soon as possible. Right, or at least 22 shots. Anyhow, The Greatest Games, Jamie Carragher. Now, this is a book and a half, isn't it, Jay? So this is you encouraging people, well, first of all, recounting games yourself, then encouraging people to read about them, then go back and watch these games.
Yes, of course. And I think in lockdown, certainly the first lockdown, there was a lot of things. There was a lot of nostalgia. I think there was lots of old games getting put on TV. There was no football. And it gave me a decent opportunity, actually, to get a lot of work on the book done and speak to lots of people. And I think lots of people look back at old games and reminiscing about how they were missing the football. And it just coincided with me doing this book at the moment. So it goes from the mid-80s when I can first start remembering football and the great games, some I played in, some I watched as a child, and some I've looked at as a pundit. And there's all kinds of different games in there, lots of teams in there as well. So Liverpool's biggest rivals, Manchester United and Everton, have both got two games each in there. So it tells you there's a wide range of teams and games involved. And I think they're just the iconic games that I would certainly say in my top 11. Not everyone else's, but certainly in mine.
Right, now Vassos has a loving family, not that he can remember, because for the last 24 hours, he's not been able to get his nose out of this book.
Yeah, no, really enjoyed it. And I love the fact that it's the only book since I read at school that comes with homework. You encourage people to watch not just the highlights of the game, but you say the whole 90 minutes. Jamie, I think my favourite of these games, I love it when a league season, 38 games, comes down to the final kick in the final match. You know which ones I mean. You know, Thomas bursting through the midfield. It's up for grabs now. And of course, Aguero. Which are your favourites?
Well, listen, I mean, I played only in a couple of these games, but I mean, that game, I think, is one of those games, certainly the Michael Thomas Arsenal Liverpool, it's a where were you moment, and I think I can still picture exactly where I was. I was actually celebrating that goal myself. I was a young Everton fan at the time, and I don't think even the Aguero moment beats the Michael Thomas moment. I don't think you'll ever get a situation in football like that ever again. And I think a lot of the chapter we talk about, obviously, how good that game was, but how important that game was in terms of what came afterwards, in terms of the Premier League and Sky Television, and how much of an epic moment that was. And maybe at that time, if you watch the footage back, as I'm pleading everyone to do, I think the game was on ITV at the time, and you just go straight to a break when the game's finished, and you think of that now, one of the biggest moments in TV, probably history with football. And that's just the way it was at the time. And I just think football now as a TV spectacle is so much bigger and better. And maybe you talk about Aguero and you can give it that bit more justice that it certainly deserves.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks so much for hanging on.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, pal. Jamie Carragher, The Greatest Games, is out now. And you loved it, didn't you, Vassos?
I really did.
I'll be honest, I haven't read it yet, but I can't wait. So well done, everyone.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've heard from three top-notch guests already, but still, there's so much more to come. The self-confessed Victorian dandy comedian Tom Allen chats his new candid memoir, No Shame, and very funny it is too. Top telly trooper Alan Carr gives us some lights, camera, action news on the third series of There's Something About Movies. Author and illustrator Charlie Maxey tells us about the audiobook version of his smash hit The Boy, The Mole, The Fox and The Horse. And Minister for Health and Social Care Matt Hancock explains the government's plans for more coronavirus testing and discuss this week's massive vaccine news. All of that and more still to come, so let's get right back to the action. Dapper Dave, who's next?
He's a criminal barrister whose new show examines his relationship to one of the worst crimes ever committed. The new two-part series, My Family, The Holocaust and Me, starts tonight at 9 p.m. on BBC One. And here to tell us about his extraordinary journey of a discovery is the brilliant Rob Rinder.
Good morning, Rob.
Morning, Chris. How are you today?
I'm very well. Congratulations. What a wonderful program. I've only seen the first one, but obviously I was in tears from about a frame in, I would imagine.
Do you know what? I'm really grateful that, and I have to say, I know your listeners know what a good bloke you are, but that you've taken the time and gifted me the opportunity to talk about this programme to you and your listeners. It's of course, an interesting watch, but it's really important too. And I know that you get that. So it really means the world. Thank you.
Right. Well, before we move on, let me just say I'm really sorry for your loss. Popper is no longer with us, who was in the show.
Oh, you're going to start me off, I'm afraid. Yeah. Oh. So he died in the summer, and he was sort of staying alive, wanting to watch the programme. He did get to see the completed piece, but he didn't actually get to see it broadcast. And we follow his journey and my other grandfather's a little bit, but we follow my Popper's journey, his ancestors, into Eastern Europe and what happened to them. And it was truly deeply affecting. And it's a program, really, Chris, for everybody. You know, we don't just follow my stories. In fact, that's only a small part of it. We mainly follow the stories of other people's families whose relatives went through this experience, and they know so little. And, you know, the reason it matters, you know, we look out to the world today, complacent in our democracy, thinking everything's fine. And, you know, as challenging and as frightening as the world is, we still think everything's going to be okay. And you look at the pictures of Amsterdam that people will see, or of Germany or perhaps of France. And you look at those pictures in the 20s and the 30s, and they felt and they seemed to everybody there totally modern. And we look out to the world today, and all you need are the right catastrophic events. You need someone to feel aggrieved by a treaty and the wrong person at the right place at the wrong time. And then you've got your alchemy for the world to descend into depravity. But it's also a program about thinking about, for everybody, regardless of your background, who our parents and grandparents were. You know, yesterday, you know, normally we would have had our brave men and women, the greatest of our generations, who really gifted us all the freedom of speech that we, and perhaps especially you, enjoy on the radio. And, you know, so many of that generation didn't talk about what they went through. And that's especially true of the dwindling number of Holocaust survivors. So this question asks, this program really asks that question about what does it mean to be parented by somebody that's been through so much? And that really invites us all to ask challenging questions about our own lives, our parents, and, you know, to perhaps locate their full humanity. Why was my dad like that? And really, I think what I'm hoping for is that people will come away, sure, feeling educated and moved, but also optimistic. You didn't see the second program, but I went with my mum, whose birthday it is today. And the two of us were gifted this chance to go to Treblinka, where my relatives, her uncles and aunts, you know, the youngest was 9 years old, were murdered. And underneath this ground, which is just marked by nothing apart from the jagged suggestions of stones that were there, we stood, and I didn't know he was going to be there, the last living human being who saw what happened there. He was the last living eyewitness, a man called Leon Ritz. And we went to make the memorial prayer to remember all of our family who had died there. And as I was about to say their names into the world, to really to gift them that respect, to breathe life back into them to that extent, Leon, as I say, the last person who saw what was there, the last witness, he touched my shoulder and he said, you know what? No, this is for all of the living people in the world. This is for everybody. And, you know, it's like, I hope that when people watch it tonight, you, when you watch it, you become a witness too. And I guess what I'm praying for is that everybody, regardless of your background or political complexion, become more courageous to stand up to prejudice, bullying, anything. You know, Maya Angelou is a real hero of mine, Chris. I was watching her the other day and she says, you know, you can't practice any of the virtues consistently. You can't be a virtuous person without courage. And I'm really proud of this program because I think people will come away feeling sure educated, moved to be sure, but also feeling more courageous in their daily lives. So, yeah,
and the fascist net ended up being spread far and wide, didn't it? Because, you know, you go to Belarus and the Netherlands and amazing stories, Rob. I mean, well done. How did this program come about?
Well, it started because, as you may remember, I did a Who Do You Think You Are? And it coloured in the outlines of my grandfather's story. And I only knew sort of bits and pieces. But, you know, it was a really good news story in this regard. There wasn't a peep of anti-Semitism when the program was on. There was sort of, you know, universal interest. And from there was this sort of flood of people who wanted to learn and know more about their own lives. I mean, thousands of people who thought that they had a connection and very often did. And as you know, there's been this massive upsurge in people really trying to come to terms with, think about history and where they came from. And perhaps above all else, as we see the dark clouds and the shadows emerging, you know, across the world, intolerance, our inability to talk to one another, now more than ever is an opportunity for us to really think about, to cherish and never to be complacent in our democracy. And what better way of doing it than telling this story and reminding everybody where that sort of intolerance, that inability to listen and hear each other, that inability not to attack people, but to attack ideas, all of those things. What better way to tell that story than through the prism of the Holocaust and perhaps the most articulate expression of how things can go wrong?
Big slot tonight, you know, nothing less than it deserves. But congratulations, if that's the right sense on making this two-part documentary. It is awesome.
Well, there's lots of things on. I'm just happy it's on. And what a privilege that you've given it a platform. And I know, as I say, your listeners know the type of person you are, but that means the world to me. Thank you.
Well, Rob, it's lovely to talk to you again. Stay safe and give my love to your mum on her birthday.
Thank
All right.
You.
My family, the Holocaust and me, BBC One, 9 p.m. Seriously, watch it yourselves and then consider getting your kids to watch it, because that's probably even more important.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's a self-confessed Victorian dandy, and the world is much dandier for it. His memoir, No Shame, is out today, and here to flick through its most fabulous pages and provide a large dose of much-needed glamour is the comedy sensation, also known as Mr. Tom Allen.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. What a lovely introduction. I feel like I'm walking into a stadium or something.
Well, congratulations on everything, and everyone here loves your book, Tom.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, oh, thank you very much for reading it. I'm very excited for it to be out today.
So you've always thought you're 46.
Yes. I always have this sense that there's been some terrible mistake and that I've always been a 46-year-old adult. And even as a child, I would be furious that I had to sit at the child's table and talk to the children, you know, the other children who I had nothing in common with, who most of the time didn't even know how to eat properly. And I always felt like I was a grown-up, and I've always been like that ever since. I don't know what's going to happen when I get to 46. I'm 37 now.
Yeah,
I'll revert backwards.
No, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Because you've still got 9 years to go, so you're 9 years left to sort of rehearse for the... Why 46, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I just think it's like that feels like a proper grown-up age, doesn't it? But I suppose you think that about all ages, don't you, when you're beneath them? You go, well, when I get to 46, I'll be... Then I'll know what I'm doing.
See, it's so funny you pick... You're 37 now, because I think 37 was... By the way, I love every minute, every second of every day. But for me, 37, you are pretty much indestructible when you are particularly 37. I don't know why. It's 3 years before your 40s, the beginning of middle age, the beginning of half time, whatever you want to say. You can still smell the zest of youth. You have the rumblings of the beginnings of real sort of foundational experience to draw from.
I think
37 is rocking, my friend.
I do feel that. Well, that's very nice of you to say. I suppose that's kind of why I wrote the book, because I did feel like for a time I felt kind of this sense of shame, and like I was worried about this like life half lived. And the book very much is about, I hope, about kind of learning to kind of know yourself and be at peace with yourself in a way that means that you live your life to the full. And I think that there's so much pernicious shame in our society when you think about it. When you look at a lot of social media, I do think a lot of those people who post angrily on social media, the same people who in medieval times would have turned up at a public hanging. And I think, you know, like we've got to sort of move beyond that. And when you think like, you know, there's been some positive moves with the pandemic this week. It feels like there is some positive changes happening in the world. I think now is the time when we want to take ownership of making a positive, happy change with how we live our lives and how we go about treating the people around us. That's my theory. I mean, I'm no politician, Chris, but that was my inspiration.
Okay, it's a pretty good theory, I have to say, because there is, you know, there's always the madness of the crowd and there's always those that stand out from the crowd. And you definitely did that from day one. So tell us about the swimming experience, which is the longest chapter to the greatest punchline that any of us have ever had the benefit of reading was it your auntie? Or your mum's mate?
It was my mum's friend who was an aunt. Okay. Just a very close friend of the family.
Yeah, so a bit of both.
A bit of both. And I was, well, as I'm sure you can remember, in the mid-90s, the most exciting thing that could possibly happen was your local authority would open up a leisure centre, which basically they meant they built a swimming pool that looked like the sea, if the sea could somehow be tiled. And the best feature of it was that they built flumes, which were water slides, which went outside of the building. Basically, a water slide that went over the car park. And nothing was more glamorous than that. And I remember standing on the staircase, you had to queue to go on it. You'd stand there in your swimming trunks, basically in your underpants on a staircase getting cold. It's a very unusual feeling unless you have a lot of affairs. I got on this flume, was going down, but because I was, you know, like 8 or 9 years old, the jets of water couldn't propel me. I had no momentum, so I just stopped. And then, of course, what they don't tell you is that somebody else will just come behind you. There's no kind of thought about it. And it was my mum's friend, Joyce, who came rattling around the corner, smashed into the back of me. Suddenly I was hurtling along, you know, nestled in the bosom of her thighs, going along together from side to side to side. Eventually came out the other end, splashed into the landing pool. And that's when I first realised I was gay.
Was it the obviously, you know, it was the physicality between you and your mum's friend's stroke aunt. But was it the splash that was the wake up call, or was a particular moment within that slide, that gradient, that incline?
I think it was the gradient that right. told me I was gay. Yeah. Oh my I've always goodness. Been gay about gradients. I mean it's sort of a jumping off point for literally. Me to talk about mine. Literally.
Vassos, you were enamoured with another aspect of the leisure centre, weren't you?
So I just love your love letter, really, Tom, to the local leisure centre swimming pool wave machine.
Oh, well, yes, absolutely. And of course, well, I mean, it did feel impossibly glamorous because you didn't go to the south of France. You just went to the pavilion in Bromley. And basically, this wave machine would be heralded with a siren, which basically sounded like, ah! And then basically what would happen is the sea would just sort of, the water would gently move, and you'd be lifted about 5 inches off the ground and then back again. And you'd think it was incredible. And everybody would shout and cheer, and everyone would be there. And then it would stop. You know, it would stop because suddenly you'd be greeted with a wave of plasters. But it was truly, at the time, truly fabulous.
37 years old, you are absolutely ripe for a big fat telly hit, Big Fat Friday Night with Tom Allen.
Chris,
for 5 to 10 years, you could rule the roost, my friend.
All right, Chris, all right. If you, okay, I love this. This feels like, I'd like this every day, I think. I feel like I'm talking to my, like, you know, like in America, people have those people who just
mentors,
pet them up.
Mentors,
yeah. That's it. Yeah. I need a mentor.
Yeah, I'm definitely not that.
Fine.
I'm definitely not that. But anyway. All right, Tom, great. But well done, pal. Thank you so much.
Oh, lovely to chat to you. Thanks so much for having me. And thanks for everything you've said.
You're very welcome. Tom Allen, no
I'll
shame.
See you soon.
See you soon, hopefully, on the telly. Wonderfully funny, utterly charming, a sharp as hell take on his own life. That's Sarah Millican.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
It's time for some lights, camera and a large fraction of action. The third series of There's Something About Movies continues next Wednesday on Sky One, and here to tell us all about it is our very own Alfred Hitchcock of the Walk. It's the silver screen siren, Alan Carr.
All right, Al.
Oh, what a lovely compliment. I've never been called the Alfred Hitchcock before. Thank you so much.
Morning, sweetheart. I understand you've just woken up, you lazy bones.
I know. I'm not a morning person, and that's why I sound quite butch at the minute, because my voice is quite gravelly.
Right.
So it's quite a novelty for me.
See, now, when we're younger, if you're not a morning person, people could say you're a night owl, but you can now not be a morning person and not really be a late night owl either. What time do you go to bed?
I go to bed about, it's getting earlier and earlier, and I'm also having a nana nap, which is a real shock to me. I think in my 40s, I'm getting 44 now, and like sometimes you just wake up and you'll be covered in dribble watching Watercolour Challenge.
We better talk about what you're on to talk about. There's something about movies. Season 3, congratulations, it's going very well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been recommissioned and we're absolutely buzzing, Chris, because we've been nominated for a Rose d'Or, which is this amazing amazing award. It's sort of like the World Cup of TV, and we're in with a load of other European shows.
Yeah.
So we're absolutely buzzing. I mean, what a series we're having. It's great.
I've got one of those.
Have you got one?
Yeah, I got one for Don't Forget Your Toothbrush.
Oh. Well, you know how amazing it is to be nominated.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. You get invited to this mountaintop in Switzerland and you have this really big posh dinner and then they give you your rose d'or. It's stunning. It's a night. Even I haven't forgot that night.
It's going to be virtual, isn't it? So I'll just be sitting here in London probably having a nana nap while it's going on.
Well, I hope you win it. You certainly deserve it. I mean, it's the thing about doing, you know, a formatted show as opposed to your chat show, which is also brilliant, but the pressure's off. You can just have a laugh. It's like having a game of footy, isn't it? And you know, the fun comes with. You don't have to be the fountain of the fun.
Yeah, and you know what? And it reminds me a bit of that show I used to do with Justin, Friday Night Project, because we do sketches, we do silliness, we do parodies, and I can really let my hair down because I've got Jennifer Saunders, Michael Sheen, Tom Allen. They're regulars on this, so you know you're going to have a lot of comedy anyway.
Yeah,
and it's just so much fun. It's just what we need right now.
It is. And is the Christmas special already recorded?
Yeah, you know, like we filmed that in March. You know, when you're sweltering outside and you're wearing a Christmas jumper and you've just had a calico. Do you know what I mean? You've got your Birkenstocks on. Yeah, so that's all done. That's really funny. Lots of Christmas parodies, lots of tinsel, really funny. And yeah, just great. I'm just buzzing at the minute with it all.
You can tell, I can tell. I can hear it in your voice. Christmas special guests will be Rafe Spall, Mo Gilligan, Gus Kahn. Third series already featured Stephen Graham, Kerry Godleman, Josh Widdicombe, Nick Frost, Phil Wang. Great lineup here. Roisin Kennedy, Kelly MacDonald, Daniel Mays, Gemma Arterton, Jonathan Ross, and again, Gus Kahn.
You know what, Chris? Yes. Can I just say something?
Go on.
On the last series, we had Florence Pugh on, and who was nominated for an Oscar. I mean, it's like insane the level of guests we have on there. You know what I mean?
It's
who
so
else
cool.
would have has an Oscar nominee on their panel show?
I know. It's so cool.
Brilliant.
I know. When was it pitched to you? Because I was thinking about it on the way into that. I thought, that's a great title for a movie quiz show. There's something about movies. I mean, you know, often the title gets you halfway there, if not further.
Yeah, it was just pitched a couple of years ago. It's from the same people who did A League of Their Own.
Right.
So I knew I was in safe hands because I love that show. Even though it's all... Because the thing is, I thought... I've been asked to go on A League of Their Own for ages, and I thought, oh no, they're going to just be bullies. It's going to be like being in sports PE at school. Do you know what I mean? It is the campest, gayest show ever, A League of Their Own. I've had my pants pulled down. They pinched me bum. I love it. So it's the same people who did A League of Their Own, and they were like, let's do a movie show. So I knew I was in safe hands, and it's just basically all the fun you get of A League of Their Own, but in a movie setting.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
it's good fun. It's a good old gang show, good old telly gang show, fun for all the family. And Vassos has a very, it's not so much a bone to pick with you, but it sort of is. Listen up to this for a second, Al.
Just a tiny, it doesn't even count as a bone, Alan. But so I was sent a, I was sent a link to the Joanna Lumley episode, which is next week's episode. And as I pressed play, my six-year-old daughter, Mary, came and sat on my lap. And as we started, the credits were rolling, and I was thinking, I can't remember if they swear in There's Something About Movies.
A bit potty mouthed.
But they don't. I don't think they do. And do they swear in A League of Their Own? So anyway, so we start watching, and you weren't, and it was very funny, and she was enjoying it, and it was just the whole atmosphere. She loved the happy atmosphere, everyone having a laugh, and you and Tom sort of bouncing off each other. It was great. And then you did the big Frost Nixon, let's recreate Frost Nixon. It was very funny. And then right at the end of that, Alan, right at the end of the Frost Nixon recreation.
S-bombs came flying thick and fast.
All of the flipping swear words all at once.
I can only apologise, but you know what? I've been doing it all week. Listen, the nurse came to my house to check for COVID and she couldn't get any childcare, so she brought her two teenagers along and they were just sitting there looking quite grumpy. She stuck the thing so far up my nose, I trumped in front of them. And they think I'm the funniest person ever.
But why did having the thing stuck up your nose near your brain make you trump?
Because normally you do it yourself, but I just give it a little swift go around. But you've got to stick it up there for like 30 seconds. And she went, Alan, I know you don't stick it up there long enough, so I'm doing it for 30 seconds. And I got so nervous, and she just yanked it up there, and I went...
Oh, dear. Alan, I love you so much. There's Something About Movies continues Season 3 on Sky Wednesdays at 9 p.m.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
A drawing of a horse set our next guest off on a rather interesting course. The audiobook of The Boy, The Mole, The Fox and The Horse is out now, and what a story he has to tell. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we're taking you straight to the source of the horse. It's Charlie Mackesy.
Very good. Morning, Chazza!
Hello.
All right.
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. Very good, Charlie. So here we are, 1 year on from the phenomenon that has become The Boy, The Mole, The Fox and The Horse. And we have the audio book out. Now, you've voiced it yourself. How did you feel about that? Because I know you don't like the limelight.
Yeah, limelight is weird. I, to be honest, I couldn't really find anyone else to do it. Or I couldn't think of anyone else to do it. And, I was in lockdown in a barn somewhere. And I just thought, I'll just record it here and see how it goes. And I tried, and I hope it's all right. You know, it wasn't easy because I was fighting with... my neighbours have lawnmowers. There's always someone with a chainsaw. There's always someone doing something when you're trying to record it. And it was difficult. But, you know, got there in the end.
Well, it's, I think we think the Emperor looks gorgeous, and we've got you've got the perfect. You know, it is your voice. It's, you know, and you've got a lovely silky voice anyway, and you've got that. You've got something going on. It's you've got the vulnerability. You know, in your tomb, and it's all the better for it. So. You may well have had a little bit of adversity whilst recording the audio version of your book, but there aren't that many words in it. I did my couple, and there were loads more words in it, and we live under the Heathrow flight path. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, you had a tougher time than me.
Yeah, it was a nightmare.
Although I did add more words because I did, you know, because it's mainly pictures, I had to slightly change. I rewrote it a bit or added things, you know.
Yeah, because what I mean, I'm presuming, and I shouldn't, but I am, so I apologise in advance, that the drawings come easy to you than the words.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I tend to just, when I wake up, I tend to just start scribbling before I've really woken up. So, yeah, drawings are easier, definitely.
Right, so adding words to a work, you know, a volume of literature that is so successful, you know, you've got to be careful with that, haven't you? Because you can't improve on perfection, but of course, hopefully nothing's perfect in the first place, and then you might be okay.
Yeah, I mean, the hard thing for me, I think, was to keep that. Some sentences are sort of, you know, for kids particularly, they know them off by heart, and I didn't want to sort of have them disappear into a sea of other words that were new. So it was, yeah, you're right. It was really hard to decide what to say, what not to say, and keep it pretty sparse, but at the same time describe the scenes a bit more.
Yeah, so have you added any other thoughts and notions, you know, as it were, sort of new pages from a book point of view, or have you just developed the thoughts and notions that are already there?
I think I just developed the scenes that were already there. I didn't really add too much. I think I got to know the characters a bit more. I had to sort of really explore it and to eke out what might be going on emotionally in each situation and that more happened to me than I haven't revealed so much, but I did think, oh wow, you know, the fox is this, or the boy is definitely more fearful than I thought, or the mole is whatever, you know. So yeah, it was a journey for me, just sort of really looking into it in a deeper way, I think.
Well, the whole thing's been a journey for you, hasn't it? You know, because you're turning into what's his name, Colonel Sanders. Do you know about that? Do you know why I'm saying that?
No, why? Girls, why? Because he lived in a car till he was 60.
Yes. Well, he didn't really. I mean, but he just had this single outlet, this deep-fried chicken outlet. And then his local authority compulsory purchased his shop. And so then the only way he could make money was by selling the license to the way he fried his chicken. And he began to make his fortune, I think, at the age of 62. And of course, the rest is history. Now, I'm not saying you're 62, Charlie, and you look at half that. You look certainly half my age and we're the same age. But how's the last year been for you?
Well, I think it's been pretty odd, but it's been pretty strange and weird for everybody. So I don't think I'm any different. You know, I think the greatest privilege to know that, you know, I sort of wrote something that has helped some people along this tricky journey.
Yeah.
That's been the best bit for me.
But it's going to be there forever. I mean, it's like Harry Potter. It's like the, you know, honestly, it's like the Bible. It's like my favourite book, The Power of Now. This this book and all subsequent boy, mole, fox and horse books will be there forever.
Well, that's nice. I mean, I'm not sure if you're right, but it's lovely if it is.
How many more books are you signed up for? And what's going on with the move? No, I didn't mean it from a vulgar point of view. I just think it's cool. And how's the movie story going with the boy, the mole, the fox and the horse?
Yeah, and the movie's, you know, it's coming along, just trying to get it right. And yes, yeah, slow. And I've never done a movie before and I'm completely out of my depth and feel clueless. But I'm enjoying the process, I think.
Listen, it's lovely to talk to you. You are the most, apart from David Bailey, you are the most reluctant interviewee ever.
Is that bad?
No, you're not bad. No, you know, you're great. You're great because of it. That's why. It's beautiful. I love it to death. And maybe you're not, but you're the most gentle interviewee ever.
I love you, though. You're my favourite, honestly. You're brilliant. I think everyone thinks, whenever it's mentioned that I'm coming on here, they go, oh, I love Chris. I love everyone. Sort of sings this song, I Love Chris Evans. So there you go.
Oh, I thought it was Piers Morgan I really love going on. It's me, is it? That's nice. All right, Charlie, lovely to speak to you, my friend.
Easy.
Goodbye. The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse audiobook is available now from wherever you get your audiobooks. And if you haven't dipped your toe yet into the world of audiobooks, then you're really missing out. And you should try it. And there's no better way in than this.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Up next, we're speaking to Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, Matt Hancock. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
I'm not saying we're excited about the news clarioned on the front page of the papers today, but obviously, you know, with a little bit of trepidatious caution.
Well, it is a significant step forward. It's a it's really promising news, but there's lots more steps to go, and the number one thing. And the reason that we're striking that note of caution, despite obviously being really pleased with the numbers that we saw yesterday and 90% effectiveness, is that it's so important that until we actually have a vaccine and the people who are most vulnerable to this disease are actually vaccinated and kept safe by it, we've still got to follow those rules, like Dapper Dave self-isolating because he got notified by the app. Like the basics of hands, face and space, keeping apart and keep having face masks when we need them. You know, we've got to follow those rules, but we do know that we've made progress with and we have a vaccine that is effective. What I want to see, the thing I'm waiting for, is to see the data on whether it is clinically safe. And if it's also clinically safe, then I give you permission to play the
hallelujah chorus. All right, good. Well spotted, by the way. And so Professor Daniel, he was saying he's not quite sure. He wasn't casting suspicion or negativity on the 90% figure that was coming out of as far as the effectiveness of the vaccine is concerned, but he didn't know where that had come from. He said, I'm not sure where this has come from. Can you sort of enlighten us as to where that might be?
Yeah, so that information comes from the clinical trials that Pfizer have been running of this vaccine. You know, there's two vaccines that are at the front of the queue, that and the AstraZeneca one from based on the Oxford University technology. They're both in this phase three clinical trial. You know, the Pfizer one has been 43,000 people have had it, and they've been able to monitor all of them. And found that it's 90% effective. And then the next step is to see the safety data, and then they will apply for a license. And the regulators have actually been working alongside them to look at all these results to be able to turn around a decision on whether it is safe as quickly as possible. And after that, it becomes a huge, huge task, which the NHS will lead on, of then actually rolling it out, right? Getting it into people's arms and making it happen. So there's lots of steps that we've still got to go through, but it's good news.
Right, so in past verbiage of the last 7 to 8 months, so, you know, a new language that we've all learnt together, a herd immunity would require between 60 and 70% herd immunity for the virus to have to break down to no longer really be able to sort of get where it wants to go. From a circuit breaker point of view, it's not dissimilar. So is this like a super circuit breaker and synthetic herd immunity? Is that what it's like?
If this works, and if we can vaccinate enough of the population with it, then with this or another vaccine, then you get that the immunity through the vaccine, which is a safe route to immunity, as opposed to getting the disease, which I can tell you is horrible and obviously deadly. But the critical thing about this information that we have is what we do and don't know. We do know that it's effective at protecting individuals at around 90%. What we don't know, as well as the safety data, the other thing we don't know and we can't know until a significant proportion of the population have had it, is whether it stops the transmission. Right. So the data, what they do in the trial is they find out, does it protect you from getting ill if you get the virus? Mm-hmm. What it can't do is test whether that then passes, you know, it still passes on, because we know from this disease it can pass on without you having any symptoms. So that question is still unanswered, which means we have to be cautious even roll it out to keep all the social distancing in place until we can then have the confidence to get life back to normal in a way that is safe. That is the that's the plan if this goes well. But it is, you know, it is a good step forward. But you can understand why we keep saying there's lots of further steps to go.
Prior to the Prime Minister's statement last night, live in Downing Street at 5 o'clock, how much did you know about this, and for how long? How close were you to being able to announce this? And second of all, actually, answer that question first, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, it is very. I mean, as you've seen from the stock market, it's massively market sensitive information. So the number of people who knew about this in advance was really small, which meant that when people were saying, with lockdown, are we going to be able to get out of it? Is there going to be a vaccine? We couldn't say to people that there was good news, coming, because it's such sensitive information. And there's really stringent rules around what people say about it.
What was the again? I know your answer is probably going to be cautious optimism. But what was what's the mood been like in Downing Street over the last 24 hours?
Well, you know, we've got mass testing rolling out, going really well in Liverpool, and we're now rolling out that out across other parts of the country. We've got the vaccine, a good step forward on the vaccine. So you can imagine, you know, it's not we don't do this. Now, I'm not in this job to win a popularity contest, and it hasn't exactly been easy these last few months. But when you do get this good news, obviously there's a bit of relief.
Yeah, good. All right, well, good luck today, and thank you for coming on the show.
Good stuff. Thanks for having me.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.